Welcome to New Books in Psychoanalysis. This is Philip Lance, your host for today's podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Luca Nicolai about the book that he co-authored with Antonino Ferro, The New Analyst's Guide to the Galaxy, Questions About Contemporary Psychoanalysis, published by Carnac in 2017. This book is structured as a conversation between a young analyst, that would be Luca, and a famous analyst, that would be Antonino Ferro. And Ferro has become a powerful voice for contemporary psychoanalysis and Bionian field theory. The book has a delightfully playful, lighthearted tone while addressing questions about how contemporary psychoanalysis has diverged from some traditional values and practices. Luca, who we're speaking to today from, I think, Modena, Italy, is that where you are? Yeah, Modena. Warned me before the interview that his English fluency is limited, although he seems to be doing fine so far. But we agreed to give it a try, and I shared some questions with him in advance so that he could consult his English-Italian dictionary. Luca is a psychologist and psychoanalyst, a member of the Psychoanalytic Society of Italy, and he's a member of the editorial board of the Rivista di Psicoanalisi. So welcome to the program, Luca.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And Luca, we always begin by asking what led you to write this book, which is titled A Book for the, quote, New Analyst. And let me say that I'm a candidate at a psychoanalytic institute in California. I probably will graduate in 2020, at which time I'll be 60 years old. So I'll be a, quote, new analyst, but not exactly a young analyst. So is this book for me?
So, dear Philip, I thank you for inviting me to this conversation. I apologize for my Italy English, shame on Italian school. But I hope you and the listener will be able to understand me. So, for your first question, I think you are a fortunate man because you can experiment a sort of time machine. As Ferro tells in the book, yes, with the graduation, the institute will subtract to your age magically 20 years. You will be more or less a 40 years old psychoanalyst. Because we have to think that in Italy, the average age of a graduates member is 62, I think, 63. And the average age of training analyst is 70-something, I think 72. So we need this kind of magic to compare to other professionals. Because it's not possible that a 60 years old is a young member. But it is. Because the analysts pay more attention to the professional experience than to the actual age. So if you are just graduates, you are very, very young. And this can lead to forget some aspects of our real life. It's like a double life. You are a father, you are an husband, sometimes some people are grandparents, grandfathers, but you are still young. So, this book is not for analysts young, but for young analysts. So, what are young analysts? Are analysts who are attracted by the new, by the undiscovered, the unorthodox. So, Philip, I think that this book is for you. Because you are spending a Sunday morning, because today is Sunday, in a conversation with an unknown Italian colleague. You don't know absolutely where we can go this morning, but you have bought the ticket. So you can think that you are, yes, a young analyst. So you asked me about what led me to writing this book with Antonino Ferro. Well, it has been a meeting, really. A meeting between two, I think, irreverent persons. I went to Ferro bringing my doubts and perplexities about his theory, I didn't go to him for a normal supervision. I went to him to know what something more about his theory, because it was for me unclear. So I was bringing with me many doubts, and he asked me to come again, bringing much more. He told me, "Okay, Luca, come the next time, but bring with you 20 or 30 of these irreverent questions for me." So he proposed to me to give life to a manual for self-defense for candidates. A manual for self-defense because we should defend ourselves from orthodoxy. That is the huge problem for us. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we have done this.
Yeah. There's two things you said I really liked. One is that the average age for graduates in your Italian society is 62 years old, which means I'll be younger than average, at least than it. That's that, which makes me feel good. I'm not sure that's so great for our profession that people aren't beginning this until they're in their 60s. But I like the time machine idea because reading the book was very enlivening. I fun to read and made me feel younger just reading the book. And one question: so when you recorded these interviews with Pharaoh, did you go to his office over the course of several months and talk to him in his office? And how did you do the interviews or put the book together that way?
Yes, it was really a great experience for me because I went in the life, on the street, in my office, in vacation, with a sketchbook, and when I found that something for me was unclear, sometimes I had in my mind a question with a patient or with myself, I written down this question in my sketchbook, and after I think 1 month or 2 months, I came back to Ferro's office, and we start recording. And it was good because it was really fine. Because some questions were already written. But when we were with our minds connecting together, some questions arouses, come out from nowhere, from the meeting probably. And so we have, I think, 3 or 4 full days together, and was an experience because really Ferro speaks as you read it, speaks as a book, and he has a really clear thought in his mind. So it was really great.
Uh-huh. And that's a great example you just gave there of field theory for some of our listeners who might not be familiar with that. But when you said that you came together and questions that had not been prepared just suddenly came out of nowhere, there was something new in the field between you that was created by you and Pharaoh being together, something new that became the question. So I think that's a good example, a little bit kind of what field theory is. But for listeners who don't know Antonino Pharaoh, can you say something? Tell us a little bit about who he is.
Yes. Antonino Pharaoh is a curious revolutionary spirit. He come from a Kleinian background, but it was unsatisfied, but interpreting continuously the envy of the patients, their aggressiveness, the attacks to the breast, and so on. He told me I was always interpreting the, and so the patient come having a problem, and then when he went home, he had two problems: one with the life, one for with me. And so he started working with the patient instead of standing over the patient. Following Bien, when Bien considers then the patient that the patient is the best colleague, it was fine because he told me that during a congress in Boston, it was a congress about Bien, he celebrated the marriage between the Bienian metapsychology and the Barringer field model. So he created the Bien field theory, which is still under development. He told me that this is quite the fourth version of the theory, but is really a living theory, because he and Civitarese and Elena Molinari, many Italian colleagues, but also North American colleagues, Andrea Celenza, for example, from New York, and many others are improving this theory. So it's really living a theory. And Ferro told me that he hopes that in the future the field theory will be cancelled, and another theory will grow up on this theory, because he doesn't love monuments. For example, he told me in the book something extraordinary. He told me that we need more Daesh, you know, the Islamic State in Syria. I told him, what are you saying to me? He said, yes, because they crashing monuments. And I say, yes, it's not a good thing. And he said, yes, it's a good thing, because we are full of the past. We are covered by the past, by the monuments, and we need space for new ideas. So obviously was joking about this this metaphor, but I think that if you want to know about Ferro, you should think about Daesh, and so Islamic State. He really is a destroyer and a reconstructor.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think I've read anybody who sort of presented that idea as strongly as he does, in terms of how psychoanalysis needs to be kind of reinventing itself or superseding itself going forward. And that idea in some ways makes me nervous, because I guess I feel like, oh, what if I don't know. I guess there's something constantly being lost when you're creating something new. But I will say that when I read contemporary forms of psychoanalysis, I usually am quite inspired when I'm reading a lot of the old stuff, which I have to read as part of my candidate seminars. I'm not inspired. And reading, when I first pulled out some journal articles just in the last several months to begin reading Antonino Ferro, I was really captivated. And so I think, as many people are when they first begin reading Ferro. And so I want to read a quote. Let's see, this is a quote from you. It's in your book. You said, quote, "At times, Ferro's psychoanalysis looks terribly like the dark side of the force, tempting, seemingly easy, powerful. It makes one want to immediately become one of his most faithful disciples, to let oneself be tempted. But meanwhile, one recoils away from it because wisdom teaches us that shortcuts do not work in psychoanalysis and idealizations have wings pasted with wax. End quote. So, as I said, your impression of Pharaoh's work really, I had that same impression, the tempting, the powerful. And when I read it for the first time, I was totally captivated. I immediately began to kind of try to experiment in my sessions with clients, some of his ideas. But can you kind of describe a little something about Pharaoh's work, how you see it, and how it's a little more about how it's contemporary?
It's a huge question. I can only give some suggestions, but I can try. So we can say that contemporary psychoanalysis is driving his attention from the representations, the conflicts, in a perspective of intrapsychic to the tools for thinking, the thought processes, and the intersubjective and interpsychic, as for example, Thomas Ogden and Stefano Bonognini are doing. So we can say that Freud thought psychoanalysis as an instrument to discover something that is already there, that is reactivated by the transference, but all is done in the past, is done in the infantile phases of the life of the patient. So we are archaeologists, for example. Not we are like Indiana Jones. We are living archaeologists. We experiment adventures with the patients, but the past is our goal, and the present is live because of the transference. So after Bion, the unconscious is every time recreating. It's every time here. Civitarese, for example, in one of his last book, invented a word that is a verb that is to unconsciate, to unconscious, inconsciare in Italian. It's good because something become unconscious. And as Bion said, when you dream your experience, you dream with the conscious and unconscious, and you take beta elements, and with the function alpha, you know, you create alpha elements and narratives and fictions and so on. The work of Ferro begins here. When two minds are in the same room, immediately they try to connect. And the groups inside the minds try to connect, to mix, to join, to meet. And so it is not a relational psychoanalysis, because Ferro told me and tells in the books, in many of his books, that there are not two people with meat, and this is relational psychoanalysis. There are two different groups of peoples, serial killers, cannibals, dwarfs, and dancers, like in the circus, you know, the man who eats the fire, the cannonball man, all the people that represent the splitted parts, the psychotic parts, autistic parts of the personality, came to life and meet together. And I think that the revolutionary aspect of this theory is that some characters are not internal objects of the patients and internal objects of the analysts, but they represent the meeting of these two. For example, if comes up Arsh father, it is not the Arsh father, the historical Arsh father of the patient, but also it is not an internal Arsh father. It is some father that is created inside the relationship. Maybe is the analyst that talks as an Arsh father, or maybe is Luca, the
yeah. When you say Arsh father, you mean grandfather or
no Arsh hard, you know, violent father.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, hard father. Okay, violent
yes.
father.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Violent father. Okay, it's better. The violence is not historical violence, you know, as in the Freudian metapsychologist, and is not an internal object as in Melanie Klein books. Is a new violent father that is in the field. And it can be the analyst, the patient that become hard, become violent because of the relationship with the analyst, or something in the relationship. You know, Pharaoh doesn't speak about transference and countertransference because transference and countertransference are currents of the patient or of the analyst. He speaks about the field. It's like he says that there are no more two different persons in analysis. There's only a group of characters in search of expression, in search of a fiction. And this is probably the most difficult thing to understand, that all what happens in the session is like a dream, a co-constructed dream, and that, for example, if the patient speaks about a cancer, my mother has a cancer, we don't have to think about an illness, about but there is something that is very, very bad, is and it's growing, you know, it can kill someone of loving, of some loved one, you know? And Pharaoh tells that we should heal or treat or understand what kind of emotions are this cancer. And he says, yes, probably the mother of the patient has really a cancer. But we don't mind. We can't do nothing for the mother. We are helpless. What we can do is treat the cancer inside the field. And it's really strange at the first glance. But if you start thinking in this perspective, you can transform in dreams most of the communications of the patient.
Yeah, that was very helpful, actually, Luca, because I learned some things in what you just said, which makes me think, I guess, this book isn't really an exposition of Pharaoh's theory in depth. It's more, and it might help, it helped me a little bit knowing his work before I came to this book, although I don't think it's necessary. The book is more about the implications of his theory for new analysts and for but I got some things out of what you just said, this idea that when two people, analyst and analysand, come together, there's not just two people, there's a group of people, and then that the characters that begin to appear in the field don't necessarily belong to one or the other, but may belong to both parties as a statement of what's happening and developing in the analysis, like a cancer, God forbid. But so I also wanted to note, you mentioned Stefano Bolognini, and I haven't read him yet. Like many Americans, I don't know the Italians very well. I'm just beginning to become acquainted, but I know that Bolognini was the president of the IPA. And then you also mentioned, so how do you say it? Civitarese? Giuseppe Civitarese? How do you pronounce that name?
Yes, it's, Giuseppe Civitarese is, a friend of Ferro and a colleague that is developing the theoretical part of Ferro's model. Ferro is a clinician. Ferro speaks every time looking to the patient, looking to the clinical part of the question. Civitarese is more like a theorist, and together they have written the last book in, I don't know if it's Carnac or Routledge, but it's the field and its transformations. I think this is the English title, and they are developing together the model. And Stefano Bolognini, yes, is an analyst of Bologna. It's one of the teachers of our institute in Modena and Bologna. We are near in geographically near, and our institute is in Bologna. Bolognini is really strange because it's one of our masters, really, and I think it's a master of psychoanalysis, but it's totally different from Ferro, because he try every time to integrate. He doesn't like Islamic State. He likes museum, but he spoke, for example, in the last Congress, IPA Congress, about the family of the analyst. And he told that probably many many sons of Freud were fighting together, you know, the Winnicottian, the Bionian, the Kleinian. And now it's time to consider Freud as a grandfather. This time is not violent father, but his grandfather. We hope not so violent. And we should integrate the different theories and model in order to understand different think different, we can have different points of view, and with the difference, we can have more knowledge about the psyche. And for example, is developing an IPA encyclopedia of psychoanalysis. And it's a great, I think it's a great project, because many colleagues for all the parts of the world are working together in order to give definitions that are that can share the richness of the different epistemologies of the models in psychoanalysis, but also a richness that can be integrated in a great book for the future. Uh-huh. And so this is what we are in Italy, we are doing.
So you're there in the middle of some very powerful, influential psychoanalytic voices there in Italy. And would you say that this book was sort of as a testimony to your development and your efforts to think through and to become a psychoanalyst under Pharaoh's shadow, kind of?
It's funny, because when you have written to me this question, this is a question you have written to me, and this question reminded me the comic strips of the Mexican guy. And I thought about Mexico and what is happening now in Mexico. And so let me send a wish to the Mexicans. But the comic strips is of the Mexican guy that is lying with the sombrero hat on his hand, doing siesta under a shadow, you know. It's a shadow of a cactus, a shadow of a wall, and it's with the heart is lying. For me, this book, it isn't siesta at all. Really, I'm serious. I'm struggling a lot between the Bion field theory and native model, the model that was taught to me, that we can consider a relational psychoanalysis between Balint and Winnicott, Ferenczi. And so integration between them is not easy. Ferro told me that it is impossible. And so I am trying to integrate these two positions, and it really is not so easy. When you are with the patient and the patient tells you something, and you don't know if it's better to inform him with a transfer interpretation about you and him, what he's doing and what he's experiencing, or otherwise play with the characters and let the story go on. Really, it's not easy. And it's more difficult when you are working with less than 3 or 4 times a week sessions. When you work with a single session or 2 sessions per week, it's difficult to create a field, because reality comes, every time comes. It's difficult to disaggregate, disintegrate the reality and transform in dream. Sometimes I do this, sometimes I find easy to do this, sometimes it's not so easy. So I think that it's good, because probably I would be preoccupied with if I were so comfortable with Faro models at all. Because as you were saying, quoting me, it's like the dark side of the force. Many candidates in Italy love Faro at all. And sometimes, it's not so good, but sometimes there is the risk that you could marry this theory without understanding what how is complex. You know, it's like, because Faro also when he speaks, when he writes, is always joking, is always playing. So it's funny, it's easy, you know. Okay, the patient told me about the killer, and I started doing a film, a movie with the killer and the policeman, and it's like a game. But really is difficult, and for me is very difficult, to radicate the characters in the deep emotions and the deep emotional field that is unconscious, that is growing in the session. I don't know if it's easy to understand this concept.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing... So the word and the way we pronounce it in English is characters, the characters in the field. You were close, but so this idea that the analyst and the analysand begin to develop together these characters into like movie scripts as a way of sort of dreaming forward so that the beta elements or the undigested emotional components that the patient brings can be dreamed into thinking and that I can see that's easier for that process to happen if you're meeting 3 or 4 days a week where you can really begin writing scripts of these characters than just once a week where maybe, like you said, too much reality comes in. So yeah, that is helpful. Let me ask, what are some of the questions that that you ask in this book of Antonino Faro?
Oh yeah, I asked really a lot of stuff. I started asking something about the setting, the frame. I asked about the number of the session and the use of the couch, for example, when to use the couch and something similar. The silence, the role of the silence in the session, and also the payment for the missed sessions. In Italy, it is a problem because now to let the people know that you need to be paid also if they don't come in the session is very, very difficult because now the people are used to pay for what they have. If they aren't in the session, they think that the session disappears, and so why are you asking for this payment? And so it's difficult, and probably for the candidates and the young analysts that haven't the good patient, we have the bad patient, you know, and we have the people that aren't used to the rules of the analysis. So you should explain to them, and it's not enough. You have to do a lot of work because they can understand that this missed section is a session. They are sessions that are not disappeared, but are lost. Lost, but are real. Someone was there, and the meeting was missed. And I asked him the secret not to lose patience. That it's a great secret. And then the conversation went to the technique. How to balance, for example, interpretations and containment, words and silence. For example, what is the meaning of elaboration? In many papers, the analysts say that the patient then elaborated. What is elaborated? What it means? And so we spoke to these concepts that probably are so common that have lost some of the meaning. And then I asked him, for example, how to face negative transference, how to listen to the communications, and for example, if your patient complains about the cold, you think about your coldness as man, as analyst, or you turn on the stove of your office. You know, when the patient is thirsty, you offer him a glass of water, as some people do, or you interpreted him about how it's difficult to stay in the desert of the analysis without having water and so on. And more, one is it's also interesting about how to face erotic transference. And I find this point interesting. If you consider any emotion of love of the patient toward the analyst, as a repetition of infantile affect, maybe you will give him a transfer, her, so if it is a woman, a transparent interpretation, you know. You are experiencing me as your father, and so this love is not a love that you are experiencing to me, but to your father. But could it happen that Margherita, for example, that Joanna experiments your kindness, your listening, your way of thinking as attractive, worthy of love? If it's really, it can be that it's some sort of true love. Mm-hmm. And I ask you, to you, Philip, do you talk her about her father? I'm not your father. And so before threatening your marriage, I go on. And in the book, what we are saying is that we talk about the difference between what is happening in the analysis as something that is totally different as what you are experiencing in your life. So, for example, Ferro told me that, yes, it could be that Joanna is falling in love with him. But there are rules, and are sad rules, sad but true. And so it was, for me, it was interesting to understand that Ferro experiments the responsibility. It's the true word in English, responsibility. Yes, probably.
Yes.
You are responsible to what you are doing with the patients. And so you can't ask for something that or someone that is outside the field. You know, you can speak about the father of Joanna, but as someone that is lost, is away. No, you are experiencing love with me. So it's a question between us. This is more difficult, and you should have a good maintenance of your capacity as analyst. You are it's difficult because when you are treating affects as real affects, you should be cautious. You should have prudence. But I think that this could be very useful.
Uh-huh. So speaking of the field, a little earlier I heard little children's voices in the background, and then I heard a dog barking. And I think the dog barking maybe in the field is something in me telling me that we're about to run out of time. It's barking at me to say we have to finish. But and I wanted to ask, I'm not going to ask, but Pharaoh says, you ask him some wonderful things about the value of reading Freud nowadays. So you're not going to have to answer that question, but unless you want to say something about it. But I also wanted to finish by asking you, you've written some books before, and you may be working on another book now. So why don't you kind of finish up with those questions?
Oh, I really, I thank you for your, for this question. I thank Sam, my dog, to have put something in the field, something super egoic, or I don't know, some time in our conversation that is outside the time, outside the space, and outside the time, because we are speaking in some sort of virtual world, and it's fine. I thank you because yes, I've written some books, and for me they were real important. In Italy, a psychologist, if you don't have the right parents, and I hadn't the right patient parents, some psychiatrists, a father that is a psychiatrist or a mother that works in the university and can introduce you to the university world. If you don't have this in US, it's totally different. In Italy, really, we are like tribes, you know, clans. Families are clans, and there is the nepotism, as in the Roman Empire time. You know, if you have the good father, you can bring his place in the structure, in the institution. It's not good, but it's so. And in Italy, if you are a psychologist, you will face a long career of unemployment, free work in the public service, occasional contracts. As I said, I ate bread and frustration for long. So I decided to focus on a project. It was an old project. I made some interviews to my grandparents, my granduncles, and some elder of my city about their life during World War II. Uh-huh. They were innkeepers. They ran an inn. Their friends had been tortured by the Nazis, while my uncle was sent in a concentration camp in Germany, in Kassel. And I published his letters to his girlfriend, and I wrote this book, Stories of War and Inn. This is the title. And was an association of personal narrations and historical documents. And really, it was great because my grandfather told me about a friend of his father that was an English spy. It was Italian, but he was a spy for the English allied, the English corp in during the war. And after a long search, I found the son of this man. And he revealed me and he showed me the documents. Really, he was working for the counter-spionage of the English Allied force in my city. So it was really like psychoanalysis before I was psychoanalyst, because really the field was constructing with my work. I was writing, I was reading, and affects, emotions, and the stories were growing up. So I was really excited. And then I started working, so I moved my interest to the psychoanalysis. And my other books treated psychoanalysis topics. The love addiction and boundaries, the expression of the rage, and the actual interpretation of the dreams. But I'm proud to say that no one of them is aimed to the psychoanalysts. All of them are written for the outreach of psychoanalysis among the general public. And I think that outreach is a vital need for contemporary psychoanalysis. Too long, our colleagues have closed themselves in the ivory tower. And now CBT, behavioral cognitive therapist, seems to be the best therapy for everything. And this is the main reason because I asked Ferro and Carnac to aim this book not only to the new analysts, but also to curious patients. And I was really very strong in saying this. And maybe this is one of the reasons for the relative success of this guide, because really we are working to make psychoanalysis well known outside. And this is the reason, because the new book I will propose to Ferro when time has come, I think next year, would be targeted to the general public. I have a title in my mind that could be The Emotional Needs of the Children from 0 to 99 Years. And I think that parents, adolescents, couples are in need to know what are the emotional needs, the need for containment, for example. In Italy, we are experiencing a lot of cases when ex-husbands or ex-boyfriends are killing ex-girlfriends or ex-wife a lot, one every day, because they can't contain jealousy, for example. And so we should speak not to other analysts, but we should speak to the people about the role of emotions, of containment, of containing the frustrations, and so on. And so I think that as analysts, we have the duty to give not only to our patients, but also to the people that could become patients or that go on the streets, go everywhere, what psychoanalysis have taught to us.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish you sincerely great success with that effort of bringing psychoanalysis more to the public and to the world beyond the small world of psychoanalysis, because there's a lot in Farrow's work that I find very, it seems to hold the potential for really speaking to a very broad audience about the incredibly vital work that we can do as analysts. But I do want to thank our listeners for listening to this episode of New Books in Psychoanalysis, where we have been interviewing Dr. Luca Nicolai about his book, The New Analyst's Guide to the Galaxy. Thank you for listening.